We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hi, back here on OMF. It is Patriots Monday. We're live down here at Gillette Stadium. It's time for us to talk to the coach. Bill Belichick, being brought to you by Mass General Hospital Cancer Center, Everyday Amazing, by the Northeast Men's Clinic, specializing exclusively in men's sexual health, McFarlane Energy, Fraser Engineering, and by your Boston area Mercedes-Benz dealer. How you doing, Bill? Congratulations.
Thanks, Glenn. Yeah, thank you. Always good to get that first one.
Sure is. Right out of the gate, you never know what you're going to get on that first one, I would think, huh?
Yeah, well, there were some unusual situations in the game. Ended up with some good situational football, and they threw some things at us that we hadn't seen and had to make some adjustments too. So it was a good, you know, good experience in the opening game for all of us.
So Deshaun Watson, the first time you guys saw him, had an unbelievable game. Obviously, coming back off the injury, were you surprised? He looked a little nervous, maybe a little skittish at times. Were you surprised to see how you guys were able to corral him for the most part?
Oh, he's a hard guy to handle. You know, he made a good play on the third and short scramble. We've seen him in preseason on a few plays. I think he's back to full strength. I just think we put a lot of emphasis in trying to contain him, and he's a tough guy to handle. I think he'll have his place before it's over.
You know, Bill, in years past, it almost seems like guys like that get out of the pocket, it almost seems like you're just looking to contain him and keep him there. But you guys put a lot of pressure on him as well. And without blitzing at all, was that part of it? Was it just winning one-on-one battles, no blitz, and your front four, you're surprised at how much pressure they put?
Yeah, that's what, you know, you always try to do. You always try to put pressure on him and keep him contained sometimes. That's a little easier said than done. But, that's what we tried to do, and I thought we did a competitive job at it. It wasn't perfect, but you don't want to just let him stand back there and not run. You want to force the issue, but still not let him run.
You know, a big part of that, it seems like the interior defensive linemen, how important their push is, and you know, being sound in that area, seemed like they got a good push, and the guys on the edge weren't running past them, which I just feel like the defensive tackles kind of get overlooked when it comes to rushing the pass. They may not get there, but it seemed like those guys were affecting the play.
Right, no question. You've got to have both components of that. If the inside players don't get into the pocket, then the quarterback steps up and there's space. And if the outside guys run past, then that creates space too. So essentially you have six gaps with five linemen, right? And so you have four rushers and six gaps to cover. So you can't get them all covered. So you just have to be able to try to put yourself in a position where there's not too much space in the gap that you don't have covered, and it'll keep a guy like that from running and picking up an easy first down.
You know, in the past with mobile quarterbacks that can run, sometimes it looks like you guys, you know, have a good blitz package that's specific to that guy, and then sometimes you just rush three, rush four, and you play coverage. Was there anything that you saw with Watson maybe in the past, from the last time you guys played him, that decided, okay, listen, we're just going to rush four and we're not going to blitz as much?
I think we did a little bit of everything. But, I don't think you want to give him or the offensive line or Billy O'Brien the same look on every single play. So we tried to mix it up a little bit, and we had some different players in there that created some different matchups. So, but we did a lot of that. We certainly did a lot of four-man rush. And, again, the players did a great job of rushing to be disruptive, but at the same time with containment.
Let's go to the other side. You spent a lot of time this week talking about Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt, Merciless, and the guys. How about the job that Trent Brown did on the left side, Marcus Cannon on the right side? Better than what you thought you were going to get, especially with Trent Brown right out of the gate?
A lot of it's team offense. It's getting the ball out on time. It's the receivers getting open. It's the offensive line doing their job. And I thought we did a pretty good job of that overall for the first three quarters. They got us a little bit a couple times there in the fourth quarter before the final drive. But it's a very good line. They're hard to block. They've got a lot of good players, and I thought our guys hung in there with them pretty well. So Trent did a good job. Marcus did a good job. L.A., all of our perimeter guys on the edge, I thought hung in there.
Is it different for you for going up against a guy like Romeo, someone you've known for so long, respect him? Is it you know what he wants to do, but yet he knows you as well? Is that a different type of game as opposed to maybe going up against a defensive coordinator you're not familiar with?
Well, I think we know Romeo's going to take away the things that you do best. So how he decides to do it, that's a different story. But he's hard to go up against because you don't – he'll change from week to week and give you a different look, which he got us on several different looks yesterday in their dime package, some of their coverages. So it's always a challenge. Romeo's one of the best defensive coordinators in the league, so it's always tough to go up against him.
Billy O'Brien's taking some heat in Houston for not calling a timeout because there was no challenge out of New York initially with the Gronk catch. And we were talking about this earlier. When you have the process, the way it works now, Bill, in the old days, I say the old days a couple of years ago, the official would stop the game. He would make the decision on the field. Now it's going back to New York. Well, you guys smartly came right up to the line of scrimmage, bam, ran a play. New York and Riveron never got an opportunity, apparently, to do anything in New York. Does that process work right now, and do you have to look at this thing differently? And that New York's got to make that decision, and it's going to take a while before they do it.
Well, in that particular case, we only had one timeout left. We weren't going to use it after that play, so we were in a two-minute drive. We were trying to, you know, press the issue. We weren't going to stand there and waste time.
No, what you did, I understand what you were doing, but what I'm saying is it difficult right now in this situation and that it has to go back to New York? Well, New York may be looking at multiple games as opposed to where an official could decide they want to look at it again.
Yeah, well, you'd have to talk to the officiating department about that. I don't really know what the mechanics are in New York and who's watching what and so forth. That's a question I don't know.
In a situation like that, okay, if you throw the flag, you can't throw the challenge flag inside 2 minutes. If you do, it's a penalty. I can easily see, you know, some coaches just, you know, throwing it maybe just because they're emotional. Do you have somebody just take that flag away from you? Not that you're emotional, that you're going to lose your cool, but I wouldn't even want that thing near me just in case I had the urge to throw it and just in a moment of lapse of judgment, you just forget what the rule is. You have a flag guy?
Yeah. No, I think I have to be responsible for that. So, which is okay. I don't think it's too much.
Is there when we were talking about just how long it takes for the review crew in New York City to, I guess, identify? Okay, there's a play we need to review. It's inside 2 minutes. The coach, the only thing he can do is call a timeout. Did you guys realize, it takes maybe 13.5 seconds. So if this situation comes up, you guys have 12 seconds to get your butts up there, either kill it or run a play. I mean, is that – because I know you, there's a lot of, you know, breaking down rules and, you know, situations.
Right. Well, yeah, first of all, when you're in a two-minute drive, as you know, Christian, you don't know how much time you have. You just know as soon as the play is over, you want to get to the line and run the next play and get off as many plays as possible. There is a replay official in the booth, though. There's officials in New York as well, but there's a replay official in the booth. He's part of the crew. And so I think it's his job to call down to the crew and let them know if there's a play that he feels like should be reviewed. For example, in that situation where it's under 2 minutes and there's no challenge involved. So could it happen in New York? I mean, I suppose it could, but there's a replay official in the booth, kind of similar to the, but different than the concussion spotter. So it's the same. Oh, that's it. It's the same type of process.
So there is somebody there in the stadium.
Yeah,
there's a replay. Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, no, each crew has a replay official, and they have I think they also have a replay assistant too. I think there are actually two of them. But again, I don't know what the mechanics are on that. I know they're part of the crew, to how exactly the communication works between the referee and all his crew and the replay official and so forth. Again, I'm not involved in that communication, so I don't know exactly how it works, but they can all talk to each other in some form or fashion. And so I know if I'm on the sideline and something happens and I ask our official that's near me, the head linesman or the line judge, on a play, he can either give me the answer or he can say, well, wait a second, let me check with so-and-so and I'll find out who the penalty was on or whatever. So there is a communication there. Again, how exactly how it functions, that would be a question you'd have to ask the officials. I don't know that for sure.
With the new rule, did you think that was a catch? Now that you don't have to survive the ground, would that be a catch, that Gronk play?
I thought it was a catch on the field, but again, it was, it's a bang-bang play. I thought he had possession of the ball. It was knocked out after he came down, the way it looked to me. So
Bill, we look at the draft. There's been some unluck stuff as far as injuries go, but Juwan Bentley, 51 snaps, I think, yesterday. If you ask Rob Ninkovich, he'll tell you strictly because he's from Purdue and he's just a smart football
player.
There
you go.
But what have you seen? Maybe just give this rookie 51 snaps and that much responsibility here right out of the gate.
Well, he earned it, as they all do. Players earn the playing time that they get. Juwan's had a good spring, good camp, and whatever playing time he gets, he earns.
Because it looked like he was he lined up a lot on the outside, too, with some of the running backs coming out of the backfield?
It depends on the call and the formation, but he could be out there. I mean, he usually plays in the middle, but he could be outside based on what we have called and what we're how they deploy.
Philip Dorsett, 7 targets, 7 catches, touchdown. Tom talked about him in the post game, specifically, doing a good job with option routes, making the right decisions, anticipating. Seems like the light has gone on for him. Have you noticed that also?
Well, I think Phil, as most players do in our system, benefited a lot from being here last year and then getting off to a fresh start this year and starting with a year of experience that he didn't have last year. We came in last year in September, so he'd already missed all training camp. And there's a lot of catching up to do. You're just trying to learn a game plan and so forth. Whereas this year he was able to, learn from scratch, work the techniques, and really just, get a better understanding and a better foundation in our system than he had last year. And that's true of a lot of players that go through that process. So I think he's way ahead of where he was last year. He's done a great job for us.
Kickoff returns, they seem to get good field position. How much of that was just not making the play, or how much of it is this new rule now where you've got to wait, you've got to take off? Is that a factor at all?
Well, it's probably a little bit of a factor, but we just got to do a better job. We didn't do a good job with the kickoff coverage. We got to coach better. We got to play better. We can't give up that kind of field position consistently on that play. So that's an area we need to work on for sure.
Random question, just going back to the old days. Do you guys still give out game balls for wins? Like individual guys, individual performance? Is that still a thing with you guys?
We recognize different areas of performance weekly, yes.
I was always curious, does a coach nominate a player, like one of his position players, and then is it do you guys debate on it, and is it, I'm just curious how that goes down, because a guy like Gronk could have a good game, 6 weeks in a row. Brady could have a great game, or maybe, because I remember Holmgren, only one offensive player got a game ball, one defensive player got a game ball, and that was it. But you guys do it differently, at least from when I was there. Like, if it could be 3 offensive guys. I'm just curious how that process works with you guys, or can a player nominate himself?
Yeah, no, players.
I vote for myself, player of the game. Thanks.
So, that work.
No, that's not really the way it works. No, yeah, I'd say so. We have different recognition for the game, the week, and so forth. And it would just depend on, again, who we feel like earns it. And it's not necessarily the guy who has the most yards or the most tackles or whatever, but just overall performance and the jobs that he had to do and how well he did them. And other things that might have taken place during the week, and so forth. So it's not a set formula, but we have ways to recognize players individually for what they've done. That doesn't override the team performance, but it does, I'd say, recognize and give you know, an accolade to guys who have done something special, whether it's a game performance or other things that we talk about.
You know, you guys put Duke Dawson on the IR. You activate Riley McCarron, and obviously ball security is a big part of what this league's all about and what you preach. And I'm curious, you got a young kid who's out there. Nobody probably feels worse than he does for muffing the punt. How do you sort of get, you gain confidence, try to get confidence back into the kid? Is because a lot of people feel like he's already voted off the island. You know what I mean? He messed that punt up. How do you try to regain confidence to a kid that has a moment like that in a game?
Yeah. Well, look, we all make a lot of mistakes, and we have to learn from them and try to keep working hard and improve them. So everybody's really in that category, every player and coach that participated in the game. We can all look at things that happened in the game and see things that we can do better. So that's our challenge, is to identify those, work hard to correct them, and do it better next time.
Do you give him another shot next week?
Yeah, well, we'll talk about the whole situation. Obviously, we've got a look at the players that are available on our roster, what everybody's role is, and so forth. Each game's different in terms of our game plan. We don't always have the same players active. It depends on what their roles are and so forth. So we'll see how it goes.
You had a tough defense you had to go up against in yesterday's game. You got a pushover defense next Sunday in Jacksonville. That should be easy going up against them. Problems they present for you, especially coming off that playoff game.
Well, it's a very talented group. They're really pretty strong in every position. They have a good front. Their linebackers are fast, and they have good coverage players. So they make you work for every yard, and they turn the ball over. They can take it away from you as well as stop you and get the ball back. On downs, they can get it going the other way in a hurry, strip sacks and tip balls and strip fumbles and interceptions and so forth. So we're going to have to do a great job with our ball security, better than we did last week. We can't be turning the ball over three times a game and think that that's going to win for us. That's just not a good formula. So we were able to overcome it against Houston, but that's not where we want to be.
Big game for Matt Patricia today. You serve a bunch of purposes in playing against the Jets. That's got to make you happy. Have you been able to reach out to him, or will you? How tempted will you be? I know it's a busy work day for you. Maybe just pay attention to how he's doing and how he's coaching that team up in his first try.
Yeah, well, like you said, this is an easy one, really. It's easy to root for him. It's easy to root against the team in the division. So all the stars are in alignment there. I've talked to Matt.
Yeah.
Of course, we wish him well.
I'm just curious, first year coach, I mean, you've been there before. You've had other coaches leave and go other places. If there was one piece of advice you would give, a first year coach in his first game as a head coach, what would it be?
Yeah, well, in all honesty, I have enough trouble just trying to coach our team. I can't really worry about everybody else, and everybody's team and situation circumstances are different. Their challenges are different. So, other than wishing somebody well, let's try to do the best job I can. I don't worry about everybody else, and try to give myself some good advice.
Okay. So real quick, last one for me. We saw earlier this week that you had a new dog named Nike. That it seemed in this special that you're pretty adamant that he probably should have been named Jack, and I'm just curious, on quiet moments, do you still call him Jack, or do you go by Nike?
Yeah, I got overridden on that one. So,
welcome to the club, Bill.
Yeah. I don't think any of us have named our dogs.
Lynn's got kids. The trump card on that, so Nike it is.
All right, so we're going to wrap things up with our Mercedes-Benz Drive of the Week. Coach, your favorite drive of the week?
Well, it's always good to get on the board first. So we're able to get the turnover on the first play on the read option, and Kyle kind of penetrated in there and looked like they had a miscommunication between the handoff and the keep, and then to be able to convert that into a touchdown with a great play from Tom to Rob and catcher on the goal line. Can't forget Rob's dance after the touchdown. That was to go with the spike. That was That was a good drive. We'll put that one in there.
Okay. When do they practice those? Is that Wednesday?
What day? Yeah, dances? It must be somewhere. I haven't seen that one, so it must be somewhere outside of my sight. That's okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right, our drive of the week was brought to you by the Boston area Mercedes-Benz dealers.
And the conversation with the coach brought to you by Putnam Investments. Putnam Investments and New England Patriots, proud partners committed to an active game plan on the field and off. One down, 15 to go. Good luck next week down in Jacksonville, Coach.
All right, appreciate it.
Talk to you on Monday.
All right, Coach. Christian, thank you.
Bill Belichick right here on OMF.
The Drive Home is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Town Fair Tire sells every name brand at the guaranteed lowest price. And Town Fair offers more free services than any other tire dealer. For the best prices on tires, nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Now back to Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier on Sports Radio WEEI.
All right, back here on OMF, we are live down here at Gillette Stadium with Patriots Monday and our conversation with Bill Belichick. And let's go back to something he talked about, because they're talking about it a lot around the league. They're certainly talking about it in Houston, because Bill O'Brien has taken an awful lot of heat for not calling a timeout. Now, I don't know how you guys felt about this. I was under the assumption, and I'm looking at it online now, and there are numerous people that have written about the process that the National Football League has when you are challenging a play under 2 minutes of play. And everybody keeps on writing. It comes directly out of the New York office. Al Riveron is the one that controls it there. Well, Bill said somebody here is in control of it for this game.
No, every game has a guy. Not just, just one guy. No, every game.
That's the point I'm making. Everybody has an individual. There's a person who was here yesterday. I can give you the guy's name now. It's Lou Nazzaro. He was the official up in the box.
Paisan.
Don't say anything bad about him.
Paisan,
you'll make
Paisan
the list, Glenn.
He blew it. Blew it. We missed it. So he was the one that should have been able to call down to them and say, challenge it. He apparently elected not to do it.
So this guy can make the decision that it's challengeable. And then New York will look at it.
Right.
No, but here's...
But he can stop the game.
Yeah, that's it. Huh. He just needs to stop
that's
it.
That's it.
That's all he needs to do. Just like the concussion protocol, just like those guys, you have a guy up in the stands that's watching to make sure if somebody gets dinged or something like that, they don't stay in the game. If they get up and they're wobbly and the refs just happen not to see it, there's another set of eyes up in the stands watching him to protect him from himself.
So here's the question I would have, Christian. Did this Lou Nazzaro decide, because we all believe it was a catch, but Bill Belichick just said he thought it was a catch, especially with the specifics now of the new rule, okay, where you do not have to survive the ground. So the ball can be exposed on the ground, and it still is a catch. Maybe Lou Nazzaro simply said, that's a catch.
Or
I'm not gonna we're not or, stopping the game, or, we're not gonna challenge
no,
it.
No, or he flat out missed it.
Or he flat out
How
missed
about
it.
That?
He flat
like,
out
like
missed
he can't
it.
Make a mistake. We're talking about Riley McCarron. You know, making a mistake. I can easily see this guy. Maybe he didn't have the right angle. First of all, credit the Patriots. Credit that offense, Josh McDaniels, for having the right awareness to say, you know what, let's get up and do it in a hurry. No flags, no penalties. The situation was perfect. The execution was right on cue. And it doesn't matter. By that point in time, I can just see him shuffling his papers. Should I do it? No? Too late? Damn it!
What play did they run? Do you remember what play they ran?
Rex Burkhead, I think, ran it. I think ran
is that what
ball.
It was? And do you
just
think
a they, handoff?
Do you, and how do they you do just, that? How would they do that?
But you have a as you're running to the line, it's just like a 2 minute run play. It's whatever, Aussie, okay. zebra, whatever. Okay. It's an off tackle play.
Yep. Yeah.
Or kill. Yep. Forget it. We're gonna burn it down. Well, it'll be second and ten. But at least we don't give up the yardage that we just gained.
Right.
We'll live to die another way.
But it was funny the way Bill had said. I think his explanation was, he was talking about his side of it. Well, we only had one timeout left.
So we're racing
to the ball. But in reality, we all know that wasn't the reason. Because if you have one timeout left, first off, they had two. No, they had one timeout, okay? But if you are worried about it, you would run a play. You'd run down there and run a play. You wouldn't just quick snap run. Right. When you only have one timeout, you're not going to just run the ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he called timeout after the Burkhead run for that final time.
See, the thing
out.
Is,
so I almost got the feeling he was
the clock.
Yeah, I almost got the feeling he wanted to answer the question with his side of it because he did not want to get involved in
why
the whole
did you
Bill
take
O'Brien
up so
stuff.
Much time?
Right,
exactly. Why were you so quick to the ball? And he's like, well, we're a 2 minute drill.
Right.
Well, but yet you ran the ball. Okay. And then you call timeout after
He didn't want to throw any shade on Bill O'Brien.
So I can easily understand how a guy like Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien is not some just chump coach.
No, that is not bright.
That it doesn't does hasn't been in these situations. The guy's a really good, smart coach.
I agree.
And
he made a mistake.
I can, but at the same time, there's a guy in the up in the booth watching specifically for this reason.
Yeah,
now
great.
I would say in a close game like this, inside 2 minutes, you're on the road. You know what? You know, when in doubt, you know, just press the button. Just press it and say, you know what? Stop it. Stop the play. Blow the whistle. We need to look at that because I really didn't get a good look at it. It happened really quick. And by the way, God dang it, you know, these damn Patriots and Brady, they get to the line so damn quick.
Is that what they say? God dang it.
No,
they're all from the South.
I think we all agree.
Bless your heart. That's a damn good play.
I think we all agree that it would have held up as a catch.
Yes.
It's just that when the Patriots are on their 41, you know, and they throw 28 yards to your 31, that's a game-changing play. There's a minute to go, 42 seconds or whatever it was, 45 seconds. That's a game-changer at the end of the half. All right, that's a 30-yard pass in the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
And you got three timeouts left, and there's like 45 seconds to go. What do you care about burning one of them? It's 45 seconds
to
go.
To take away a 30-yard gain, potentially, even though
I don't think it would have.
It's worth it. It's worth it at that point in time in the game to chance to take that risk. Regardless of whether you think, you know, Brady and Josh are going to have more time to design a play, you also have enough time to design a defense, maybe a different blitz back. Maybe you get an interception. Who knows? Maybe there's a fumble because Jadeveon Clowney gets by Trent Brown or one of these Reader gets through the interior line like it did or later in the game against Shaq Mason and Andrews. So O'Brien's going to get beat up for it because they know they had a timeout. They had recognized, the reporters recognized that he had a way. Even with that said, he had a way to stop the clock, and he didn't use it.
So the way that Bill Belichick described it is, even though we have the people, Al Riveron and others, in New York watching a zillion TVs, like they're at a Buffalo Wild Wings. Okay,
seriously, just, can I get some ranch?
Exactly.
You didn't bring my margarita.
It's like in Vegas. You ever go to Vegas in a Super Bowl on a Sunday,
yeah,
and you're watching your game, and everybody starts screaming, and you're like, "Why? It's an incomplete pass." And then you realize the guy just kicked off a kick return for a touchdown, and like the screen way over there. Can you imagine that setting? Like, what am I doing?
I would see. It's either that, or it's just the opposite where it's like a nuclear site where, you know, the one guy has his hand on the button and everybody's got headphones on. They're all really quiet. All you hear is beep, beep. And if you need something, you press this button, a green light goes on, and they rush to your aid. What do you need? What do you need? Should I press it? No. Either way, the guy in the booth should have been able to bail O'Brien out.
Well, that's what Bill was telling us today. The process is that here at the stadium, there's somebody upstairs. In this case, it was Lou Nazzaro. He's the one that lets New York know we got a problem here, you know? And at that point, they stopped the game, but they didn't do it. So the question I think we all have is, this Nazzaro guy, did he think it was a catch? Or did he just screw up? He just took too much time.
You know what?
And the Patriots are too smart, and he ran the playoffs quickly.
15 seconds, maybe?
I don't even
13,
think that. No, not that I mean, much. No,
it,
less
it happens
time.
Quick. He catches it. Everybody recognizes it. I forgot what the code word is, but whatever. You know, hurt. I don't know what it is. But an obvious code word alerts everybody. Get to the line of scrimmage. Hurry up. Fast pace. And then as soon as everybody's set, you're calling that run play, or you're just killing it.
You know what's a shame, too? And all the talk about, you know, whether O'Brien should have called timeout, it's just the catches of Rob Gronkowski.
Mm.
I mean, that catch, which I think would have been a catch this year under the new rule, the other catch he had in the seam, too, even the fumble. You know, yeah, I'm sure you would like to secure the ball better, but the first touchdown, I mean, we haven't seen much of Gronk. We heard how he feels great. You knew that this team, we said we're coming into it, we said you shut down Rob Gronkowski. There were times when they tried and it just didn't matter. Like, he is such a beast, such a weapon. You know, it's not so simple to just say double 87 and we could figure this thing out. It's not. I mean, he and Brady are on such the same page. That touchdown pass, it was like he was covered and it just didn't matter. He just knew where to throw it.
Well, that's the amazing thing about it.
Even the catch, though. Gronk post game was talking about, you know, because you know as a receiver whether you're open or not. He's got two guys hanging all over him. And at the time, he's sitting there. He talked about it in the post game. He's like, man, I didn't even know what he was doing.
He did.
No? Okay, you don't have
I was like Vice and two guys on me. And when I saw the ball in the air, I literally thought first thing, like, what is Tom thinking? When that ball was in the air, I had like a guy grabbing me. And I was like, I just got to go for it. Can't let them make a play on it. So just went up for it, made the catch. And I did make the catch. I don't know how. When I went to the ground, I mean, I had it stabled in my hand. So it was definitely a catch, but Tom went up to the line really quick just to make sure got the playoff, which was nice, and it was wild.
But as a wide receiver, ever had a ball like in question, a catch in question that's ever said, I didn't catch it?
No.
Grubb's like, I did catch it.
I had it stabled in my hand.
No question.
Stabled. He had it stabled.
But he is such... It was just out there for everybody to see yesterday.
Well, that's
he is
why,
such a beast.
That's why he's got a legitimate argument.
Yes,
when
there's no question.
You sit there and talk about he's getting paid as a tight end when he really should get paid the same way the top wide receivers do. And because he is that big a weapon. So you go into yesterday's game. What did we talk about for the last few weeks? Receivers, receivers, receivers. Now you take Julian Edelman out of the first four games. Whoa. Look at, I don't know if this is the worst receiving core Tom Brady has had, but it's one of the weakest he's had. Maybe 06, maybe 13. We heard all of that. Everything is on the line now for Rob Gronkowski to go out there because all it's going to be is double 87, double 87. That's what you're going to do. Any opponent's going to do that. And then he comes out of that game and has that type of production. That's pretty amazing.
He targeted 8 times, I think.
Seven catches.
Yeah.
And
pretty amazing.
Bill Dorsett, 7 for 7.
Yeah. But he goes down that seam, and they throw the ball up high, and I don't care who's defending him. Good luck. And you know what? You can hit him after that. Doesn't make a difference.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, it's always like when he catches that ball in
the
seam.
He got the ball punched loose.
Yeah, he got it punched loose.
He fumbled. The last time he fumbled was like
5 years ago.
Fifth grade.
Tom went up to the line really quick.
But same thing's going to happen next week, Lou. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's
Jalen Ramsey,
and,
Rob and maybe, Gronkowski. Maybe.
And I don't know where people were with the wide receiving group. You know, I mean, I'm just concerned. Like, you could sit there and say, oh, you were so worried about the wide receiving group. Not here in week one. And not, you know, week five if Edelman comes back and everybody's healthy. You know, I just worry about depth. I worry about injury in a sport where everybody gets injured. That's
against a good secondary next week.
Sure, that'll be a big challenge.
That's a challenge.
But I mean, Philip Dorsett is filling a role that we didn't know if anybody was.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't disregard 7 targets, 7 catches, 66 yards. You know, I mean, when you look at it, you say, okay, James White was another guy we figured would factor in. 9 targets, 4 catches. It seemed like they were in on that too, saying, okay, we got to take away White out of the backfield. You know, and you know, Gronk, they could try. It just didn't work. He's a beast. But Philip Dorsett is kind of like this X factor with this offense right now. Because I don't think it's Hogan. I think it's Philip Dorsett.
Yeah, you're right. So if you take the 7 catches off of Dorsett and you drop them down to 2 or 3, suddenly a lot more goes on the shoulders of Rob Gronkowski. All right, 617-779-7937. Matthew Slater's going to join us in a bit. We'll find out a little bit about those special teams and more. And your phone calls at 617-779-7937.
OMF. We return to more of Ordway, Merloni, and Fourier on Sports Radio WEEI.
All right, back here on OMF, time for our conversation with Matthew Slater. It's all brought to you by New England Fat Loss. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you guys.
Nice win yesterday. It's always good to get out of the gate nicely. So let's talk a little bit about special teams, where I'm sure when you looked at the film today, things were not going so well, right? Let's start with the fumble on the punt return. You got kind of knocked out of the way in that sucker. What happened, and what do you say to a young guy like that who has it knock off his face mask?
You know, that's always a tough situation. I remember my first game as a pro. I had a similar situation come up. You just try to continue to encourage him. He's really done a great job for us all preseason. He's a guy that we love in our locker room. You know, we've got to do a better job of trying to keep gunners off of him and making it where he can have a clean catch. So, you know, we got to go back to the drawing board and make sure we do a better job of handling the football this week.
It seemed like he had the ball for a second. And I think it seemed like Bademosi took it away from him. Was that what happened?
You know how it is at the bottom of those piles. You know, Johnson did a good job of getting on the ball. I couldn't really see it from my vantage point because I was tea kettling over the top on the other side.
You take a hit, man.
But, you know, I don't know what happened at the bottom of that pile. It was tough to see on film. You just kind of see a scrum for the ball. And like Coach always says, it's about, you know, the guy who comes out of the pile with the ball, and we got to do a better job of trying to get in there and get it.
Speaking of the bottom of the pile, and I'm sure you've been at the bottom of some for whatever reason, tackles, fumbles, whatever, you know, you're fighting for it. What's the craziest thing you have done to try to get someone to let go of the football? Now, I want you to be honest. You're a God-fearing man, good father, good son, but this is a different inside the white lines. I know there's desperate situations. Got to get that ball back.
Man, there's been some stuff to go on at the bottom of that pile.
Just give me. You don't have to give me. You know, we're not going to look at you any differently, Matthew.
I know I've pulled some legs. I've pulled some arms. I've driven my forearm into maybe some chest and neck areas. You know, you got to get out of the pile with that ball. Yeah, so
at least you're staying above the belt.
Above the belt. Yeah, I'm always going to be above the belt. Now, I can't say that for everyone now.
See, I was going to say, that was the one area where I would know someone would let go of the ball. There's only one area where you would think someone would be like, oh, you can have it.
And there's always a guy out there that's willing to test that limit.
Yes, always.
I'm not that guy.
Okay.
It's like Ebner be that guy. I don't know why, but I think Glenn asked Bill the question, was it execution, or is the new kickoff rules as far as spacing, where everybody, is that still an adjustment for you guys?
Well, you know, there's certainly no excuse for that. I think that, you know, we've got to do a better job with our voids and our spacing and, you know, how we see the returner and how we relate to him in regards to, you know, our responsibilities. We got to play better with our hands, getting off blocks. We got to be better against double teams. And I think that the onus just falls on us for that. We didn't do a good enough job of that yesterday. I think it was the first time that we had our whole group play together, and hopefully we build from there. Certainly don't want to go south from where we went yesterday. So there was a lot of correction today, and you know, hopefully that's something that we can get cleaned up this week.
Matthew, we know how it works down here. If you're a fifth-round draft pick and you suddenly get an awful lot of playing time like Juwan Bentley got yesterday, coaching staff loves you, and they're going to play you an awful lot. Rob Ninkovich raves about this guy. Of course, he might be a little biased, the Purdue thing, but you referred to him as Gerard Mayo today.
He's Gerard Mayo-ish. There's only one Gerard Mayo. Let's clear that up for the record. But I think he shows some traits that really remind you of him. Gerard's probably been the most influential teammate I've ever had on my life personally as a man and as a player, and he means the world to me. But he does some things that really remind me of Gerard. He's got a unique ability to lead. He's got a unique ability to be himself in a locker room full of, you know, established veterans. And that really sticks out. And, you know, he's been accountable. He's been productive. He's been consistent, showing up, being the same guy every day on and off the field. So you really appreciate those things about him.
Anybody at this level has got phenomenal athletic ability or whatever. Can you now, as a veteran, when you see some of these young guys come in and say, special right there, that there's something deeper than just his physical ability? He gets it. He understands it.
Certainly, and I think those are the things a lot of times that you can't measure at a combine or something like that. I think the character of a man and who he is and what drives him, what makes him tick, the intangibles that he has, whether it's intelligence, leadership, you name it, those things tend to jump off the page early and set guys apart. And as I said, Gerard was that way. He was a captain our second year, and you definitely see some of those characteristics with Brother Bentley.
So with Dorsett, he's getting a lot of attention because, you know, receivers, new young guys, old guys, free agents, regardless, you know, they come here and there's always this, let's wait and see, can they figure it out, will they be able to adjust, will Tom trust them? Seems like with Dorsett, the year has really done him a lot of good. Now, you're paying attention, obviously. Is there a moment in time in one of the practices where you said, uh-oh, maybe when the media wasn't there during the summer, where you said, oh, he's got it, I can tell?
You know, I think for me, just watching him during the off season, the off season was so big for him, and the way he prepared himself, the consistency with which he worked each and every day, it really jumped off the page. And I think that builds confidence in, you know, the quarterbacks throwing the ball to him. It builds confidence in our coaching staff and obviously the rest of us as a team. So it's really great to see Philip do such a good job over the last couple of months. He's a great teammate, great kid. He's really worked his butt off to get to where he's at now.
You know, you've been in this league a long time, and I'm sure you've seen it before. I think Ian Rappaport had in the NFL Network that Jeremy Hill torn ACL. And, I mean, he comes into camp. He's got to fight for this position. He wins that job. He's on special teams. He blocks that punt. I mean, that's every year you got to see something like this where your heart goes out for a guy, I'd imagine, a teammate.
It's crushing. You know how much guys put into this, the sacrifice that's required, not only from themselves but from their families, the physical toil, the mental toil, the time, and to have that happen, it's really devastating for us all. And you really feel for a guy like Jeremy who's really came in here and bought into what we do, coming from a different program in Cincinnati to come in here. It was really a smooth transition, and we were really thankful to have him. Your heart breaks for him, but our locker room is going to support him. Whatever he needs, we're going to have his back. We're going to be praying for him and wishing nothing but the best for him.
All right, Matthew, great seeing you.
Thanks, guys.
Congratulations.
I appreciate it.
On the first point. Good luck down there in Jacksonville. Matthew Slater joining us, all brought to you by New England Fat Loss. And that was the report Lou was reading, that it does look like he is lost for the season with an ACL. And so, you know, it's normal. I'm looking at some of the transactions right now when guys hurt. There's only one person that can go out there and get injured and then rise from the
Ray
dead.
That would be Ray Lewis.
No, that would be Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers.
He rose from the dead last night. I'm watching Twitter, and I happened to be watching the Red Sox game at the time, and then suddenly Twitter lights up. Aaron Rodgers,
he's
dead.
He's back.
Aaron Rodgers dead at 34.
You know, I know he wasn't moving well. At the end of that game, it looked like it was starting to stiffen up on him. But that second half is I feel like, is the way the offense should be for Aaron Rodgers.
Get you know
rid,
what he, you know
get
he
rid
was,
of the ball.
You know what he was in the second half? Tom Brady.
Well, he was getting rid of the ball.
Yeah, it was Tom Brady.
And I feel like, you know, even like before he got hurt, you watch him throughout the years. And like his first look's never open. Second look's never open. And then he runs around like a fool. And then he makes a great pass, but it's like his first look is never open. And then all of a sudden, the second half, like his legs are bothering him a little bit, and they're like, okay, I don't know what it was, but that looked like the offense that guys
but
were open.
Just
getting rid of the ball
but
quick.
You know what it is? We sit there and we were talking to Bill about it. Okay, so you have a quarterback like Deshaun Watson. In what part of your evaluation do you say, okay, we're not going to blitz this guy? We're going to rush four guys. Yeah, we're not going to give him the same look, but you know, maybe we're going to do some twists on this side and whatever, but you're still bringing four guys. So for the most part, you should be able to take care of it, you know, for the most part, right? But you don't blitz him. So same thing with Aaron Rodgers. You don't blitz him. You let him sit back. I remember the last time the Patriots played him, there were a couple plays where he was back there for like 14 seconds.
Yeah, I know.
Just patting the ball, waiting.
That's what I mean. But he's got some weapons too. And you're like, are these guys just not getting open? Again, we're talking about Bill, and you know, I think most mobile quarterbacks, you know, they don't get pressure on, but the reason why they usually don't get pressure is because, you know, they just bring four. The difference in this game was that the four that they brought got pressure. Now, I know the Houston line was a little bit beat up, no question about it, but, you know, they still didn't blitz a guy like Watson. They didn't have to blitz a guy like Watson. They usually don't against these guys that move well because they didn't have to. They just had four dudes, and they were putting so much, 12 hits, three sacks. I mean, that was nice. And I don't care how much that Houston line was beat up. It was still nice to see.
So I thought he was Tom Brady in that second half of that game. He operated with mobility through a 12-by-12 square. You know, that's what he did. And he didn't have to go outside the pocket. And you're right, Lou. He unloaded the ball the way Brady would unload the ball. And he found guys. And let's face it, they're playing the Bears. And
that
so
pass
as good as
Cobb, that game winner was stupid.
But as good as Khalil Mack was in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was dog tired. I think conditioning got to him
Absolutely.
In the second half. Matter of fact, he kind of backed off when he had an opportunity to get Rodgers on that game winner. He backed off. And then he actually chased Cobb down the field and never got to him. But so part of it was the Bears.
It's funny. So when Rodgers got hurt, I was like, oh, here we go again. You know, they keep pushing Rodgers to replace Brady, and He gets hurt again.
Danica, so look worried.
We'll have to wait till next week. He is
showing Danica Patrick in the. I mean,
well, I mean, we wouldn't. They show Giselle if she was there and Brady got hurt. You know?
Remember Jessica Simpson up there for
Tony Romo. More Tony Romo. Just ruined that whole deal. Just ruined the Dallas Cowboys.
Isn't it interesting though that people online either love Tony Romo or hate Tony Romo? There's no like in between. There's no, hey, he's good, but you know, sometimes he talks a little too much. There's none of that. Okay, you either love him or hate him. It's like Jess Mendoza last night talked about seat at Fenway Stadium, or if she called it a stadium, and there were people.
Not a bad seat.
I tell you what,
there are 15,000 seats in that place.
There's a few things said last night. I don't know. Did you see? I don't know if you knew this or not, but A-Rod announced that the Red Sox are going to go only as far as Rick Porcello takes
them. Yeah, I heard that.
Who said this?
He did. It was stupid.
Only as far as Rick Porcello.
Really?
The game four starter, and the minute he gets in the jam, his ass is out.
Was he just right after talking to J-Lo? What happened? Was he had sex on the brain?
He was more interested in his little bet with Mark Wahlberg. Yeah. He was into that, and he was But getting back to Jess Mendoza, did you notice what happened? Some people were slamming. What are you talking about? You've never sat in the seats at Fenway.
It's still so much fun just to walk around. Came in early yesterday. Sat in four different seats around the park because there isn't a bad one in this stadium.
Can we please stop romanticizing the stadium?
Go sit at the pesky pole. You're staring at the Red Sox bullpen. That's your seat.
The whole right field corner. You know what she meant, Lou.
She had her seats, one by the on-deck circle on one side, the on-deck circle on the other.
But guess what? The PC police were very quick to say, but she's a wonderful analyst. She does a great job. And maybe she's
stop picking on her.
Oh, they were quick to defend her.
I know. I don't like it when they do the games because they're so out. Like, she's talking about like Mookie Betts was up at the plate. He had 2 for 2 with 2 doubles. And she's like, you know, we spend so much time talking about Mookie Betts, you know, the MVP candidate was coming up. And she's like, about his defense and what he brings to a team defensively. But I tell you, offensively, and I'm going, what the hell are you talking about?
As they're chanting MVP.
I mean, it's like, yeah, we talk about his defense, but it should be, the conversation should be the other way around. It should be, we talk so much about what he does offensively, but it's defense, you know, or what he does in a base pass. She started with, we talk all the time about his defense, but you know it's his offense that
into
he goes
the
up there.
Zone.
I don't. I would say this, Lou.
The biggest problem, and you're right about A-Rod and where he was coming up with Porcello being the difference. What concerns me the most is that Ryan Brazier, who apparently was the guy we were depending on the most, other than Craig Kimbrell, not so good these days. Are we going? Am I now putting all my faith on Bobby Pointer? Is that what I'm doing?
No, I told
Stephen
you.
Stephen Wright.
I told you yes.
Stephen Wright.
I told you. I got people.
And you didn't like this. You didn't like this a few weeks ago. This idea.
Thinking
of Stephen
that he's
Wright.
Like an eighth inning guy. You know what I mean? No. But what he's going to be, I'll tell you what he's going to be.
He might be your eighth inning guy.
No, he could be that fifth inning or sixth inning guy and say, here's the ball. You keep pitching until I take you out. And maybe you hand the ball off. Like last night, what did he do? 2 scoreless. Hand the ball off to Kimbrel. He might be that guy. And I heard people, we had this debate over the weekend, and people are like, don't even want him on the roster. And I'm like, what do you mean don't want him on the roster? He's like, he might be, you know, you might not like it, but he might be the answer for your team, sixth, seventh, and evaluate where he is in the situation, and he might hand the ball off to Craig Kimbrel.
We're doomed.
I can't believe we're talking about this at this level right now, that's what we're looking at. But I think you're right. Barnes hurt now, whatever. And I'll say this, because I know, and nobody was talking about much about the bullpen this weekend. They were talking about the swagger of the Houston Astros, which I would give to you. They come in here. They're not scared. That a-hole Osuna is pretty damn good, even though he seems to be a miserable human being. And the other guy, what's his name, Ryan Pressly, that they got? Where'd they get him from?
Minnesota,
right? He's pretty good. They're pretty good. But I'm more concerned about what you've got with this bullpen right now.
It's
than
the same.
Anything else, which has been the same thing we've been talking about for
finally,
4 months.
We're going to finally figure it out.
Like, 4 months.
Been, I mean, honestly, this is the only discussion that's worth anything.
No, but people
Bryce were, Gay, I know.
People
okay,
thought
gonna,
Ryan DeBrazier was the
well,
savior.
Well, Dombrowski told you that. Cora's been telling you about it. He's got a great story.
I still think Brazier's going to be an important piece. I felt like Friday night, Alex, even though you're playing Houston, was still in, I want to call it, experimental mode or not. Because when you got first and second in the seventh inning, one out, Who has been the guy that cleans up every inning with guys on base who was well-rested? Heath Hembry. Instead, he went with Brazier. Why? Because he knows Brazier can start a clean inning. Now he wants to put him in other situations. He wants to put him in – what's he like with guys on base? And it didn't work out. And Kelly didn't work out. That was the frustrating thing on Friday night. Two guys have been throwing the ball well. What you're going to hear now, which is really going to piss me off, is now with these latest struggles, whether you know it's Alex or Dombrowski, whoever, they're going to pin this on Matt Barnes not being available.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to pin this on. No, I'm serious. I'm not even going to get pissed. I might get pissed then. But it's going to be like, well, you know, our bullpen's struggling, but the loss of Matt Barnes is really going to help us. Okay. The loss of Matt Barnes, the guy's got a 9.3 ERA in the last month or so. And they're going to pin it on that.
Well, they're going to say
Barnes down, our bullpen's a little thin, and that's why we're having some issues. And like he was lights out to begin with.
They're going to say the hip was the reason that his earner on average was ballooned like that. I agree with you. Right from the get-go, and we've been talking about this now for 4 or 5 months, they did not have that type of depth in the bullpen.
No, the Astros struggled with their bullpen. What'd they do? They got Presley and Osuna.
Right, exactly.
The Indians' weakest link was their bullpen. They went out and got Hand.
Yeah.
Hell, the Yankees' bullpen's loaded. They went and got Britton. This is a self-evaluation problem. They think these guys are really good. The guys that have been inconsistent now for like the day they've showed up here at their organization, all of a sudden they're going to just flip the switch and be consistent and be good. Come playoff time, mark my words, it's not going to be any of them. None of these guys that everybody keeps telling us are good. It's going to be Stephen Wright and Nathan Eovaldi and Craig Kimbrell. That's going to be your high-leverage bullpen.
Yeah, I hate to say it. First of all, you're not getting Osuna from Toronto anyway. They're not going to deal him within the division. Second of all, if you do, Lou, we would have had a month and a half, 2 months of shows about get him out of here.
They would have changed the name back to Yawkey Way to try to take the distraction
exactly.
away.
Exactly. All right, 617-779-7937 right here on OMF.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.